Well, brethren, it's good to be before you once again. It always feels good to be with my home brethren. It makes it a lot easier to give a sermon, because admittedly so, every time I get up here, I meet it with a little bit of apprehension. And it gives me a lot of appreciation for those who do it every week. I'm definitely not there yet, but hopefully you will benefit from this lesson as I did. It's a reaffirming lesson. And you already know I am no biblical scholar, so you're not going to be amazed with a lot of knowledge that you didn't already know. But hopefully, we all can benefit from what I have to offer this evening. This is a lesson that I've previously written, and I wrote it about 6 months ago. And when I was asked to do a sermon, I was given about a week, so I didn't have a whole lot of time. So when you ask a 21-year-old man who's living in a college town in springtime what he's going to give a sermon over, most of the time he'll probably just go to what's on his mind. So the title of this lesson is called Facets of Dating. Now hold your snickering and giggling, because let me explain a little bit. Dating and relationships is a subject that sparks pretty much everyone in here's interest, whether you're in the middle of that awkward and fun game, or you're pointing and laughing at those who are, or you're remembering about the time when you and your spouse were dating. Whatever it is, there's a lot of people, or it's a range that, it covers a wide range in this audience. Now, it's not a lesson about dating tips, for if it was, especially coming from me, go ahead and get your songbooks out, because we'd be here for about 30 more seconds. What sparked this, what the inspiration of this, was I came across an article by Dr. Phil on my internet homepage. And it was entitled, The Character of Him. And it had different attributes of what a woman should be looking for in a person of interest, a potential mate. You know, I'm going to click on that. I should get some benefit out of that. So I did, and as I was reading down the list, it was attributes that we as Christians should have, and it was really a pleasant surprise. Things like trustworthiness and honesty, integrity, just on and on. It was kind of like a fruit of the Spirit type list. And so I figured that we could definitely get some benefit out of that. And while it applied, it was directed towards females, obviously. We can all benefit from those different attributes. And one thing that I want to make clear is that it's not personality traits. These are character traits. You'd have the personality of a boot and still maintain these character traits and things that we should all be exuding as Christians. The list had about 50 different attributes, so I narrowed it down to about 28 that I narrowed it down to about three we're going to look at tonight. And the three different attributes that we will look at tonight is person of interest, someone you're looking for, is someone who is motivated. And these are all very well-known attributes, kind of stereotypical, but someone who is motivated, someone with whom you can communicate well and establish a close bond through communication, and someone who is confident. So the first one, and I know this sounds like a motivational speech at first, but I guarantee you we're going to get into a lot of scripture, and what I really like to do is let the scripture speak for me, because it's definitely more eloquent than I am, so be prepared. So first of all, someone who is motivated. Obviously, no one wants to be around a downer, someone who's going nowhere in life, someone who's a basement dweller. Obviously, no one wants to be around that. That's not a person of interest. Well, as Christians, we shouldn't even have to worry about being a basement dweller. It is something that shouldn't even be part of our character, part of our demeanor. And why is that? Because we have the most motivating purpose in life in serving God as Christians. There's nothing that should light a fire under us more. And the way that I designed this lesson is we're going to look at examples in the Bible of people who exuded these different attributes. And a great example I came up with was Josiah. Turn to 2 Kings chapter 23. Starting in verse 1 and we'll end in verse 25. And it's a little lengthy reading, but I really want to emphasize how motivated Josiah was. You'll get the picture once we keep reading. Just keep in mind that attribute that Josiah is displaying here. 2 Kings chapter 23, starting in verse 1. Now the king sent them to gather all the elders of Judah and Jerusalem to him. The king went up to the house of the Lord with all the men of Judah, and with him all the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the priests and the prophets and all the people, both small and great. And he read in their hearing all the words of the book of the covenant which had been found in the house of the Lord. Then the king stood by a pillar and made a covenant before the Lord to follow the Lord and to keep his commandments and his testimonies and his statutes with all his heart and all his soul, to perform the words of this covenant that were written in this book. And all the people took a stand for the covenant. And the king commanded Hilkiah, the high priest, the priest of the second order, and the doorkeepers to bring out of the temple of the Lord all the articles that were made before, that were made for Baal, for Asherah, and for all the hosts of heaven. And he burned them outside Jerusalem in the fields of Kidron and carried their ashes to Bethel. Then he removed the idolatrous priests whom the kings of Judah had ordained to burn incense on the high places in the cities of Judah and in the places all around Jerusalem. And those who burned incense to Baal, to the sun, to the moon, to the constellations, and to all the hosts of heaven. And he brought out the wooden image from the house of the Lord to the brook Kidron outside Jerusalem, burned it at the brook Kidron, and ground it to ashes, and threw its ashes on the graves of the common people. Then he tore down the ritual booths of the perverted persons that were in the house of the Lord, where the woman wove hangings for the wooden image. And he brought out all the priests from the cities of Judah and defiled the high places where the priests had burned incense from Geba to Beersheba. Also he broke down the high places at the gate, which were at the entrance of the gate of Joshua, the governor of the city, which were to the left of the city gate. Nevertheless, the priests of the high places did not come up to the altar of the Lord in Jerusalem, but they ate unleavened bread among their brethren. And he defiled Topheth, which is the valley of the son of Hinnom, that no man might make his son or his daughter pass through the fire to Molech. Then he removed the horses that the king of Judah had dedicated to the sun at the entrance to the house of the Lord by the chamber of Nathan-Melech, the officer who was in the court. And he burned the chariots of the sun with fire. The altars that were on the roof, the upper chamber of Ahaz, which the kings of Judah had made, and the altars which Manasseh had made in the two courts of the house of the Lord, the king broke down and pulverized there, and threw their dust into the brook Kidron. Then the king defiled the high places that were east of Jerusalem, which were on the south of the Mount of Corruption, which Solomon, king of Israel, had built for Ashtoreth, the abomination of the Sidonians, for Chemosh, the abomination of the Moabites, and for Milcom, the abomination of the people of Ammon. And he broke in pieces the sacred pillars, and cut down the wooden images, and filled their places with the bones of men. Moreover, the altar that was at Bethel, and the high place which Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel sin, had made, both that altar and the high place he broke down, and he burned the high place, and crushed it to powder, and burned the wooden image. As Josiah turned, he saw the tombs that were there on the mountain. And he sent and took the bones out of the tombs and burned them on the altar and defiled it according to the word of the Lord, which the man of God proclaimed, who proclaimed these words. Then he said, "What gravestone is this that I see?" So the men of the city told him, "It is the tomb of the man of God who came from Judah and proclaimed these things which you have done against the altar of Bethel." And he said, "Let him alone, let no one move his bones." So they let his bones alone with the bones of the prophet who came from Samaria. Now Josiah also took away all the shrines of the high places that were in the cities of Samaria, which the kings of Israel had made to provoke the Lord's anger. And he did to them according to all the deeds he had done in Bethel. He executed all the priests in the high places who were there on the altars and burned men's bones on them, and he returned to Jerusalem. Then the king commanded all the people, saying, "Keep the Passover to the Lord your God, as it is written in this book of the covenant." Such a Passover surely had never been held since the days of the judges who judged Israel, nor in all the days of the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah. But in the 18th year of King Josiah, this Passover was held before the Lord in Jerusalem. Moreover, Josiah put away those who consulted mediums and spiritists, the household gods and idols, all the abominations that were seen in the land of Judah and in Jerusalem, that he might perform the words of the law which were written in the book that Hilkiah the priest found in the house of the Lord. Now before him there was no king like him, who turned to the Lord with all his heart, with all his soul, with all his might, according to all the law of Moses, nor after him did any arise like him. Now that's a pretty extensive list. Was Josiah just half-hearted about reforming his kingdom? Obviously not. He went through every step he had to take to make sure that he was pleasing in the sight of God. Left no stone unturned. Is that how we serve the Lord? Do we have that same fervor? I mean, he changed a whole kingdom that was in ruin, and he brought them back to the Lord. Well, brethren, we have a kingdom also that we are charged at, and in Matthew chapter 10, verse 7, go ahead and turn there. It's a short verse this time. But Jesus is talking to the apostles here. And he charges them, and as you go, preach, saying the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Brethren, we're to be motivated. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. How awesome is that? We're charged with that as the apostles were in Matthew chapter 10. And so, there's no reason for us not to be motivated. Sure, it's easy to get in the day-to-day apathy of trying to keep a fervor, but it's necessary that we stay motivated. Is every day going to be like Josiah and him tearing down the high places? No. But after that, he made sure that it stayed that way, and that's what we need to do, is to stay motivated. And something else that should motivate us in Hebrews chapter 12, along with this kingdom, like Josiah changed his kingdom, Hebrews chapter 12, verse 28. The kingdom that is at hand that we need to preach is a kingdom that cannot be shaken, as verse 28 says. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably, with reverence and godly fear. And then something else that's a little tangent that could, and I don't mean to be disrespectful when I play on these words in verse 29, but it says, for our God is a consuming fire. And that'll light a fire under us because obviously it's God. Like I've said repeatedly, there's no reason for us as Christians to not be motivated, to be a basement dweller. And does that help in the dating arena? Sure. Sure. But that's beside the point. That is not what my main focus is in this lesson to keep in mind. The second attribute that was in that list was communication. And this is something that guys can relate to me here for a little bit. Young guys, well, old guys too probably. You always want to talk on the phone, or you always need to be talking. You need to be able to communicate with whomever you're dating. And of course that goes into marriage too. I guess that goes without saying. But we as Christians should have this skill. I guess you could call it a skill. And why should we have the skill? Because we should be in a constant state of communication with our Father, the Lord God Almighty. Again, a good example. Turn to Daniel. Daniel chapter 6. What we'll be looking at is right before Daniel's in the lion's den, when King Nebuchadnezzar is in reign. We'll be starting in verse 4. Daniel chapter 6, verse 4. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. Then these men said, we shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God. So these governors and satraps thronged before the king and said thus to him, King Darius, live forever. Excuse me. Verse 7. All the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and satraps, the counselors and advisors, have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of Medes and the Persians, which does not alter. Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home, and in his upper room with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees 3 times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. The skill of communication, that character attribute, should really be a part of us. It should be in our spiritual DNA, if you will. It's something that we need to make a custom, as Daniel did, as it says in verse 10. It was custom since his early days. And it's so easy to talk to God. All you have to do is take the time. I can end your relationship. But something really interesting, if you keep reading in this chapter about God, about Daniel's relationship and his communication with God, is that he really takes ownership of that relationship. If you go to verse 20. And when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Then Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever." And in verse 22, he says, "My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth, so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you." Now the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he believed in his God. Daniel knew where his strength lied. And his strength came from his consistent and continual relationship with God and his talking to God. And this is evident to the king Nebuchadnezzar here. Shouldn't that be something that's evident to those around us? When you have a good relationship and you have a good communicative relationship, it should be evident. It shouldn't be hard to talk to someone. And that's what people are looking for in that person of interest. Someone whom you can talk well with, someone that you can rely on, someone that you can, enjoy talking to. That is something that we should have the same type of feelings toward our relationship with God. And like Daniel took time out and set that custom every day, like in verse 10 he says he set three times a day, it doesn't always have to be a long period of communication. A healthy relationship and that good relationship that strengthens the bond through communication, you just talk to them whenever you need them or whenever you want to. And another example of this is in Nehemiah chapter 1. Go ahead and turn to Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 1. This would be an example of having the character attribute of communication when things are bad. Being able to talk to someone when things are bad. And in this case, obviously, being able to talk to God. Go ahead and start in verse 1. And this is another verse that's a little lengthy, but I want to add the length in there for emphasis. To really get inside and compare how our relationships are with that of Nehemiah and his relationship with God through prayer. Starting in verse 1. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, "It came to pass in the month of Chislev in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan, the citadel, that Hanai, one of the brethren, came with men from Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped, who had survived the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, 'The survivors who were left from the captivity in the province are there in the great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is also broken down, and its gates are burned with fire.'" And I believe this is when Jerusalem is in complete ruin under the reign of King Artaxerxes. So things are really bad for the children of Israel at this point. And in verse 4, this is Nehemiah talking. He says, "So it was when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned for many days. I was fasting and praying before the Lord, before the God of heaven. And I said, 'I pray, Lord God of heaven, O great and awesome God, you who keep your covenant and mercy with those who love you and observe your commandments, please let your ear be attentive and your eyes open, that you may hear the prayer of your servant, which I pray before you now, day and night. For the children of Israel, your servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against you. Both my father's house and I have sinned. We have acted very corruptly against you, and have not kept the commandments, the statutes, nor the ordinances, which you commanded your servant Moses. Remember, I pray, the word that you commanded your servant Moses, saying, If you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though some of you were cast out to the farthest part of the heavens, yet I will gather them from there and bring them to the place which I have chosen as a dwelling for my name. Now these are your servants and your people, whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand. O Lord, I pray, please let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who desire to fear your name. And let your servant prosper this day, I pray, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer. Continuing on into chapter 2. And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, that I took the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had never been sad in his presence before. Therefore the king said to me, "Why is your face sad, since you are not sick? This is nothing but sorrow of heart." So I became dreadfully afraid and said to the king, "May the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tomb, lies waste, and its gates are burned with fire?" And the king said to me, "What do you request? So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king, and we'll stop there in verse 5 and get backtrack, and we'll end in verse 5 with Nehemiah's example. Nehemiah is very open and honest with God, and he's totally relying on God. He tells him and confesses to him that him and his fathers have sinned against him, and he just wants to reestablish that relationship with God. Because it's the children of Israel are in shambles right now. That's the state of Jerusalem. The wall is broken down, so as to speak, and he's trying to repair this relationship. He's using good communication skills. And all it really takes to have that good communication skills is to do it, is to talk. And unlike any earthly relationship we can have, God is that much more. He knows us. He knows us from day one. It's like talking to someone who knows you, knows your heart, knows everything about you. Why would we not talk to God in times of sadness, in times of happiness, but like Nehemiah, whenever we really need him, he's there for us, and that's proof of it. And like we entered this example, like I said, it doesn't take a lot of effort, and it doesn't even have to be a long time to pray. In verse 4, right before Nehemiah goes in front of the king, what does he say? What did he say he does? He says, "So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king." Who knows how long that could have been? 30 seconds? Maybe, if that. But it just shows that he's constantly trying to be closer to God, and he's constantly praying to God. And that is something that we definitely need to add to our character, to the Christian attributes of our character. One final example of good communication, and probably the best example that we have, is David. If you would turn to Psalm 63. Psalm 63 is very evident of David's relationship with God, and a relationship that's possible with us too. Let's go ahead and read, starting in verse 1, and we'll read the whole psalm, but it's not too lengthy. Starting in verse 1, Psalm 63. "O God, you are my God. Early I will seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh longs for you in a dry, thirsty land where there is no water. So I have looked for you in the sanctuary to see your power and your glory. Because your loving kindness is better than life, my lips shall praise you. Thus I will bless you while I live. I will lift up my hands in your name. My soul shall be satisfied as with marrow and fatness, and my mouth shall praise you with joyful lips. When I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches, because you have been my help. Therefore in the shadow of your wings I will rejoice. My soul follows close behind you. Your right hand upholds me. But those who seek my life to destroy it shall go into the lower parts of the earth. They shall fall by the sword, and they shall be a portion for jackals. But the king shall rejoice in God. Everyone who swears by him shall glory. But the mouth of those who speak lies shall be stopped." Don't you wish? I know I wish I could talk to God like that. But it's not impossible. The same sentiments, the same thing can be accomplished, maybe with not so eloquent of words as David. But it's not impossible. What does David say? What does he in verse 6? He says, "I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches." He's speaking to God, telling him that every day he is meditating, not just thinking about him, he's meditating. He's wanting to be closer. He's putting that extra effort into his relationship with God. Just a little side note, extra effort is always a good thing in communication, obviously. And that's something exemplified by David here. Moving on to our final character attribute is that of confidence. And to transition smoothly, hopefully, another great example of this is David. And we're going to stick on with David for a little bit. We've all heard that, you know, I'm looking with someone with confidence. I think that's one of the most overused attributes that someone's looking for. But quite honestly, you know, who wants to be around someone who's not sure of themselves? Someone who is, you know, always seems weak and seems unconfident. It's not something pleasant to be around. But as Christians, we don't have to worry about that. We don't have to worry about not having confidence. And I think you can obviously see where I'm going with this. And like I said before, this I'm not talking about a personality trait. I'm not talking about someone who's at the front of the charge. That may be more stupidity than confidence. But, you know, you've heard of someone with quiet confidence, someone who's sure of themselves, someone who knows that things are going to go right because they have that confidence within themselves. And the kind of confidence that I want to get across can be found in 2 Corinthians chapter 1. Go ahead and turn there. Second Corinthians chapter 1, verses 8 through 15. Obviously, this is Paul talking to the Corinthians in one of his letters. Starting in verse 8. He says, "For we do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, of our trouble which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened beyond measure above strength, so that we despaired even of life. Yes, we had the sentence of death in ourselves, that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead, who delivered us from so great a death, and does deliver us, and whom we trust that he will still deliver us. You also helping together in prayer for us, that thanks may be given by many persons on our behalf for the gift granted to us through many. For our boasting is this, the testimony of our conscience that we conducted ourselves in the world in simplicity and godly sincerity, not with fleshly wisdom, but by the grace of God, and more abundantly toward you. For we are not writing any other things to you than what you read or understand. Now I trust you will understand, even to the end, as you also have understood us in part, that we are your boast, as you also are ours in the day of the Lord Jesus. And in this confidence I intend to come to you before, that you might have a second benefit." And what kind of confidence is Paul talking about there? A confidence that is constructed through, in verse 12, through simplicity and godly sincerity. A confidence that trusts totally on God. You know, in Romans 8, verse 31, a verse that we all know very well, "If God is for us, who can be against us?" What more confidence do we need? And as we're trying to make these attributes part of our fiber, that should be a part of us. We should be confident individuals as Christians. Does that mean that you are, like I said, you know, in the limelight all the time? No, that's not what I'm talking about. Being at the front of the charge. Now, if that's what's needed, then we should be confident to undertake that. But we should have a confidence in trusting God through that simplicity and godly sincerity. So that's the kind of confidence that we want to make part of us. And like I said before, David is probably one of these best examples. If you go ahead and turn to 1 Samuel chapter 17. And we'll start in verse 28 through 30. And these are different scenarios and by way of David that we could exude some confidence. Starting in verse 28 of chapter 17. "Now Eliab, his older brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was aroused against David. And he said, 'Why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, but you've come down to see the battle.' And David said, 'What have I done now? Is there not a cause?' Then he turned from him toward another and said the same thing. And these people answered him as the first ones did." So here's David, you know, the youngest, the smallest. And he's being ridiculed. You know, "Why are you here?" And he's like, What's your cause? He stands up. He has that confidence that he is in the right place. As Christians, we need to have that same confidence that we are in the right place. We're doing what we should. Even when those ridicule, even if those close to us ridicule us, we need to take that stand. Continuing on, we'll start in verse 38 of another example. And this is as David's entering the camp, right before he's going to encounter Goliath. Let's skip ahead to verse 38. It says, "So Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put a bronze helmet on his head. He also clothed him with a coat of mail. David fastened his sword to his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, 'I cannot walk with these, for I have not tested them.' So David took them off." Imagine, if you will, and this might be a little personal relation that's easier for me to relate to, but I remember starting off in football, putting these big old pads on, this big helmet, and I'm not going to lie, I was a little intimidated just by the equipment. How in the world am I supposed to do what I'm supposed to with all this stuff on? So just take something. Let's take this. How about a peewee kid talking like 8 years old? And just think about this little kid with these huge pads on, right? And his jersey's down to his knees. Is he going to have a whole lot of confidence? Probably not. You know, he's not well equipped for this. He's feeling small. He's feeling small within inside this big armor, if you will. But how did David respond to that? What did he say? He took them off. I don't need them. I don't need them to do what I need to do to serve God. And he is totally, and he's in front of the king at the same time. And I can just picture David, this young kid, in front of the king saying, "I don't need your armor. You know, it's the best stuff that is available." And he doesn't need it. Why? Because he has confidence in God. Let's go on to verse 42, and let's finish this adventure, if you will. Verse 42. "When the Philistine looked about and saw David, this little kid who can't even fit into armor, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good looking. So the Philistine said to David, 'Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?' And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, 'Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field.'" Now, David's a giant. And I know we all know that, but just think about David's confidence. Really harp on David's confidence throughout this battle. After he's mocking him and challenging him. And how does David respond? Verse 45. "Then David said to the Philistine, 'You come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied.'" If I was Goliath, I would be the one who was scared if some little kid said that to me. Are we not to have that same confidence? David's confidence comes from God. He is sure of himself. He's going to make this happen. He's going to come out the victor. And as Christians, we have that knowledge that we're going to come out the victor. And that should be a part of our daily demeanor. You know, relate to David in this part. What is your Goliath? What keeps you from being confident? Hopefully nothing. Sure, David had to go up against Goliath. He had to get the stones from the brook and throw them at Goliath. And it took work, it took effort, it took guts. But it's, all those things are provided for us through God. And it's something that we can have that confidence in. And like I said earlier, you know, these, as we are making these parts of our character attributes, and we should be seen as having these attributes. You know, they don't need to be hidden. We're not boasting in ourselves. We're boasting in God. And it's not. And people know when you're sincere, when you hold these attributes. People of the world see that. But as Matthew chapter 5 says, verses 14 through 16, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." Like I've said, and I don't want to make this clear, that I'm not talking about personality attributes. We're talking about character attributes. And these character attributes shine through, whether you're vocal or not. It doesn't matter. Just containing and making these a part of our Christian walk is what our goal is. And like I've said before, as Christians, we should already possess the qualities that society deems as crucial to being prime targets or person of interest for dating. And that's what I really like about that list, is that this is what society desires. Society desires people of goodness, and just having that knowledge that society is looking for people as we should be, that should be a great motivation for us. Motivation to communicate with others in preaching the gospel and to God, and having the confidence to do so. Every time I conclude, and we're about to finish this lesson, and I honestly sped through it a little more than I had hoped to, but every time I conclude a sermon, I can't help but think that those of you who aren't Christians are missing out on so much. It's a wonderful life. It really is. Is it hard? It's not hard. Does it take effort? Yeah. Maybe some more effort than others. Are there going to be hard times? Sure. But when in life are there not hard times? What in life is just a walk through the park other than a walk through the park? It's a wonderful life, and you're missing out on so much. Missing out on being a prime person of interest is just a little part you could be missing out on. But all of these good things are byproducts of the Christian life. And God designed it that way. That's part of the confidence that we should have in God. God knows what He's doing. The instruction manual's right here. For the good times, for the bad times, for the tough times where we need effort, for the times that we need to dig in, for the times that we have to face Goliath. You know, whether it be false teachers or your own temptation, whatever. God gives us this confidence and the implements in which to enact our Christian character that we have talked about tonight. So I urge you, if you're not a Christian tonight, to seriously think about it. It really is a wonderful life that God has laid in store for us. And like we talked about, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Something beyond this earth. Something that is attainable for us if we trust in God and follow His instruction manual and follow the Bible and follow in truth also. All it takes is one step. And if it's not right now, if you're still thinking about it, don't wait too long. Because I don't know when that one step won't be able to be taken. Start right now. Have the confidence. This room is filled with people that are trying to be Christians of confidence, trying to enact these attributes that we've talked about. Or if you are a Christian, and maybe you're not, you need help with trying to live your life with motivation and or communication or confidence or whatever attribute you're struggling with. Like I said, this room is full of people who would love to help you, and all it takes is one step. So whatever your needs may be, let us help each other in serving God in any way that we can, and realizing that God is our utmost importance and our utmost priority in serving Him through our walk. Whatever your need may be, why don't you come to the front as we stand and as we sing.